St. Clement's Church, April 15th, 1941.
Income tax day. Of course, it wasn't income tax day.
No.
In 41.
No. Yeah.
Now, were you used to being in St. Clement's Church?
No.
But your wife was, is that right?
My wife was from St. Clement's. I was from Sacred Heart. And I told my wife, I said, you want to go to St. Clement's? It's okay. I said, any church is good for me. Mm-hmm. I said, as long as it's a church. And she said, no, we'll go to Sacred Heart. I said, okay. And it was Father Zahler. He was a good priest. And priest liked him. Good priest, Father Julius Zahler. Z-E-H-L-E-R.
Z-E-H-L-E-R.
L-E-R.
Now, people seem to think highly of him.
Yes. He was, in our opinion, he was one of the best priests that ever represented Sacred Heart Church. Julius Zahler.
So he had your wedding at St. Clement's,
no,
right?
No, 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 because it was her church. That was, Father Zahler was for Sacred Heart. And Trace?
Yeah?
What was Father Joseph?
Who?
The priest that married us.
Joseph,
wasn't it? Gedosi.
Gedosi. I can't remember.
I think it was Joseph. I'm pretty sure. Joseph Gedosi. He was an assistant at St. Clement's.
How do you spell his name?
G-A-J-D-O-S-I-K. G-A-J-D-O-S-I-K. Gedosi. Gedosi. That's just like we say Fibic. You'd think it's as F-I. It's F-A-J-B-I-K. Fibic. F-A-J.
I was scrubbing the shower stone. I like to get that done and put shorts on because I get cleanser.
She's got the tape on. You got the tape on? She's got the tape on.
That's all right. That's all right.
But anyway, Father Gedosik married us. And then that's when we went to Sacred Heart.
Yeah,
we was at Sacred Heart.
Well, I lived right across the street all them years. I knew everybody that went there. That's sure home to me, you know.
Sacred Heart was.
Yeah.
Sacred Heart was right across the street.
Our home was right across the street from Sacred Heart. Mm-hmm. And all these people that were going there were familiar. There were no strangers, you know. Mm-hmm. So I just decided to go there. Well, did you give her the history about where the first church was?
Oh, I told you that.
We talked about those things the other day.
We turned that when we took a tour of the town.
I think you got his whole history.
You think? Were you listening to it?
No, but I lived with her 50-some years. He'll go like Aunt Katie. He'll never stop. I told the girls, as long as Larry's living, your mother is not dead, because Aunt Katie was a talker. He's the same.
Who was Aunt Katie?
That's Mary Iwanski.
Oh.
You went up to her place,
okay,
a cousin of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's Mary Iwanski. And her mother, she did, up until, I'd say about, there was about 2 years before she passed away. See, up until she was 75, 76, she was still pretty sharp.
Uh-huh.
A lot of times she'd have to stop to think, you know. But she knew, or she knew where people lived in town and everything else, her mother. Her mother, I only wished I would have asked her more about, I give you a copy of Joe Heidenkamp. Heidenkamp from Springdale that built the glass back, the window, the mirror plant down in Springdale. I think it was Aunt Katie that told me that she was in a little building right off of Center Street. It was a small place that he used. He worked at the glass factory, but he knew a lot about mirrors.
Who was
French,
that, her husband?
Joseph Heidenkamp. No, Joseph Heidenkamp that came. The fellow that came to Trenum. First landed in Creighton, worked at the glass factory down there, worked at the one in Trenum for about 10 years, and then started his own factory. And Mary has a Aunt Katie had a picture of Springdale when they had a washout in, it's sometime in 1910 or 1911. There was a high water, and the water washed around onto some ground in Springdale But it didn't get near Heidenkamp's glass factory. That was in Springdale. And Mary has that picture. That was Heidenkamp's glass factory that he has. Aunt Katie had that. Aunt Katie kept a lot of pictures.
Now, you and Mary took us way up to the top.
Top of the tanks, through the water tanks and everything. Yeah. There. Showed you where all the place.
And you said something about when they were trying to put the expressway in, before they got the present site, it was going to go through Tarentum?
Through Tarentum. This alley behind our house, from our wall, up into the people's on the lower side of West Lemon. That's where Mary lives, up on West Lemon.
Yeah.
Almost up to their house. That was going to be the express.
This how all these homes here.
And all these homes.
These homes
and that street. Everything was going to be, they was going to dig down. That was from this street, from this street all the way up to part of all their garages. And up on West 11th Avenue, everything was going to be torn out to put an expressway through here. And we had a meeting with the people at Fox Chapel High School. And everybody got in and they said, yes, we want it, we want it.
Who said we want it?
They invited all the people from industries, like from the Alcoa, it's an aluminum company in New Kensington, from Pittsburgh Plate Glass, from Allegheny Ludlam Steel, from Penn Salt. All this industry was around here when they were talking about, that was in 1960, they was talking about building this expressway.
1960.
Weren't
a lot of these homes on 10th Avenue supposed to go from which house?
All the houses from this side. The people on the lower side were going to live.
Towards
Majewski's
corner?
And go down into what they call
Deep Street?
They call it, what is it? Crab Diamond.
Shut it off. I could have taken that. Did you put it on?
I put it back on, yeah.
Oh, no, I wanted to tell you something, but I didn't want to.
I had started asking about the upper part and the expressway, and you were telling me about the area that the state that wanted to take back for Route 28?
Oh, yeah, they was going to take, as a matter of fact, they was going to start from this street right here.
10th.
From 10th. This was all going to be grazed. The reason they wanted to go way up and take those high garages out of there, that was going to be a slope coming down, a hill coming down. This street, starting right at Western Street, they was going to start going downhill. They was going to put walls for those homes across the street. All these homes were going to go out. They were going to start, and I asked them, I said, well, why, when we went to Fox Chapel High School, I said, and you're going through 10th Avenue, I said, you have a plan there. I said, tell me, I said, is this going to go downhill? He says, oh, yes. He said, from East Street down, that's a big hill. He said, we got to start from Western Street to go down. I said, now, wait a minute. I said, when you get to East Street, we'll probably use that, just East Street, that section to go up. He said, we'll make that like a bridge to get you up onto the Bakerstown Road. They was talking about coming through the corner when you cut out the Bakerstown Road there.
The
Burkett's
yeah.
home up there, it's on a corner.
Yeah.
Okay. They was going to cut some of that out of there, and I said, well, now, wait a minute. I said, that's main traffic coming down. Well, he said, what we're going to do, he said, we're planning on no parking on West 11th Avenue. He said, and Center Street will be a bridge over. That'll be a bridge over. But he said, then from Center Street over, on over, he said, that will be like maybe like a bridge for one lane going out and the one way coming back will go up on West 11th Avenue. I said, boy, they're really chopping this town up. And I said, my brother was there, and he said, you mean, he said, we've got these people up Pitcairn Heights and on the hill here, they go to the parochial school? How are these kids going to get across here? He said, you're only going to have a bridge at Center Street, and the people live up on West 11th Avenue, they're going to walk down and over Center Street, and then come back to Sacred Heart School again. He said, well, those are our plans. No other bridge. They would eliminate Grantham Street. That was those houses all the way over 10th Avenue. All these homes would go out of here on the upper side of the street. And, we had another meeting then. We had some of the councilmen said, oh, let them do it. I said, no. I said, we're not going to do that.
Were you on council then?
No, yes. I was on council then, 55-71. Mm-hmm. I said, no. I said, they want to do it in the other part of town. I said, I don't care what they do the other part of the town. I said, but not the part that I'm representative. I said, we're not going to have that. I said, different fellows that used to go to Canada for fishing and everything else, you know. One of the fellows stopped me one day at the fire hall. He said, you know, Larry, he said, just tell them. Say, look what they do in Canada. You're on an expressway, and it'll say exit number or A or number 1 mile, and you go to such and such town. He said, you could do the same thing for Trenum. He said, they could move that thing out a mile out in the country and go through all farms. And he said, a road 1 mile, you'll be in Trenum, or half a mile, you'll be in Trenum. He said, not chop the town down, not tear it apart. And that's what they were actually, PennDOT was going to do that. And there were officials, and one fellow, he actually got up and he said, I want to ask you something. He says, everybody here is all in favor of this expressway. He said, what about the people that have their homes? We would like to know. Oh, he said, you'll get your time. He said, yes. He said, but you let all these people give a long speech. And he said, maybe somebody has to go home and go to work. Don't have the time to stay here. And that meeting was a good hour, 2 hours, almost 2 hours at Fox Chapel High School, 2 hours. And then the people that objected, then they start telling why that they're not opposed to the expressway. It's the location. And we told them, we said, in Trenum, we weren't well pleased. Now, I was on Trenum Borough Council from 55-71, 16 years. And those are jobs.
What did happen then with the expressway? Well, how did they get it changed?
They changed it. They said they was going to go behind the water tanks.
What made them change it?
Don't ask me. I think everybody called their representatives and everything else and told them. You know, everybody called and told them that they weren't approved favoring the location for the Allegheny. As a matter of fact, then this is what they did do. And I said, they really give you a dose of the medicine that you gave them. They're giving it back to you. They covered everything to Katanning, everything down the road, and this was the last section constructed.
I remember.
This was the last section constructed. The last. Yep. I told my brother, I told everybody. I said, we give them our medicine, and they're going to give us our medicine now. I said, they'll do everything. I said, and they'll stretch this out. I remember Father Malinak, they were digging that hill up here. They awful lot of rock, and they'd have to put dynamite. And they'd blow a siren that they're going to blow. Well, I guess they had cracks in St. Clement's Church and everything else. Father Malinak, he went through them right away. He says, I want you people to come up and look at the cracks in my plaster on my church. He said, anything that has to be fixed, he says, I'm not paying for that. He said, you did it that way.
Did the state pay for it?
Oh, yes. They paid for any damage to anybody's property. Mm-hmm. Anybody's property. They paid. PennDOT paid for that.
Yeah. Had PennDOT already bought some of the homes up here?
Oh, they owned all this. That is one of our big problems here. And Mrs. Altman could tell you the same thing. Then,
how did they come to own it?
They just eminent domain. They just come around and told you. That's what upset Mr. and Mrs. Rodnani. He was really upset, the man that owned his home. Mm-hmm. He was all, I said, Mr. Rodnani, he thought that maybe just as a councilman I'd be able to tell him, don't you do that. You know, I said, no, I can't do that. I said, but I objected to it. He said, why do they want to do this? Then what did they do? They got slumlords, a slumlord. They turn around, There's all kind of riffraff living in town now.
Where are the slumlords from, Tarentum or from Alabama?
Well, I won't name anybody, but one person did buy property here and then just left it go down. Is that right, Trace?
Huh?
People bought the property and just left it go down.
Oh, yeah, it didn't help.
But don't mention no name.
We have a man that bought a lot of this, and he's the trash landlord. The only people he rents to are people that are on welfare, because he knows he's going to get the rent. It's really ruined this street. It made it bad. So it didn't help any at all. Maybe he gets frustrated. But the good people took care of their property, and they were good people. Now you get these renters, they come in. It used to be you knew everybody that went through the Elliott Street. Today you'll say, wonder who that is. We don't know. And they're not good people. They're careless. There's a family in the next street, the father's in jail. This is what the expressway did to this street. And at one time, 10th Avenue was one of the nicest streets in Trenton.
Well-refined
property
people.
Owners left. There was so much, the children said, my parents got sick. That's what brought on my mother's heart attack, my father's stroke. It upset the people so badly it made them sick. So it didn't help any. That was a bad decision. And they didn't go through 10th. So now what do we have here? A lot. We have a lot of riffraff on this street. It's bad.
What brings people to Tarentum now? I know that the industry brought them before.
They're what you call people that's on welfare. Those are the kind of people come to the town now. That's what's coming to the town. The only, now we've got Andy Rimper that lives right on the corner there. Now, they're okay. They're good people. We have Joe Navigli, the policeman. They're good people. Wojcik's next door, good people, real good people.
The only reason that Rovnanik's left here was because this state was going to take their house.
They were going to take their home.
Otherwise, they would have stayed here.
They would have stayed. I even tried to tell them. I said, Mr. Rovnanik, I said, why don't you stay? They're going to take it anyway. They're going to take it. I didn't want to, upset them or anything. I was on council then. I told them, I says, Mr. Rovnanik. I said, Matt is his name. I says, Mr. Romanek, I said, stay here. And his daughter had left to California, see. She had left. And they just picked up and they went to Hemet, H-E-M-E-T, Hemet, California is where they went to. And just like Trace told you, the neurosurgeon, Dr. Peter Lindstrom, a good doctor. The daughter, she was the people that knew her, they told me she was just the top of her grade in the Catholic school, and she commuted every day down to the University of Pittsburgh to be a doctor. She wanted to become, that's Agnes. Uh-huh. Agnes Rovnanik. They only had this one, just a daughter. That's all they had. Oh, a great life to live in. But,
how long a period was that then, if they started in 1960 until they decided to build the expressway elsewhere?
Well, see, there were they other sections, like they would, I'll tell you what, I can find out from the Chamber of Commerce someday. I'll ask them when the expressway first started and when they went. I remember that was in 1960 that we had that meeting, 60 or 62. 60 or 62, that we had that meeting at the high school down at Fox Chapel. Because we figured, that was another, the PennDOT thought of, well, we'll go down to Fox Chapel. Because they were already had everything planned for Sharpsburg, Etna, that section down in there, see. And we're going to start moving up, now we'll meet these people. But we had to go from here down to Fox Chapel. To go to a meeting instead of saying, well, why can't we have it in Trenton High School or up at Harbrack or someplace like that? No, you got to go down to Fox Chapel. That's where they had their meeting.
Do you think it was on purpose that they finished the Tarentum part of the express
that's what I'd like to know. They knew it was a lot of money. They knew that was a lot of money.
Yeah.
They had to pay for all. They already owned these homes. They owned it. They had already bought it then, you know. They bought all these homes. As a matter of fact, we bought this in 72, 71. And Joe Cray and his wife and children, they lived here when PennDOT had it. I'll have to go to the Chamber of Commerce. They'll have, or up the library. They'll have the record. They should have the records of it. When they, because I remember they had a big celebration when they got the section from Freeport. That was from Freeport to Slate Lake. And then they were working on that section up at Catani. As a matter of fact, that was in 78 when I retired. In the 70s, I was driving truck for Pittsburgh Playgrounds. I think in 69 I was doing that. They had that section from Freeport. Once you go up here to Natrona Heights and got on 908 and got on the expressway, you went straight through to Catani and you had to deliver glass to the Ford City plant down at Creighton. And I'd drive and you'd go up through Natrona Heights and go out 908, shoot straight up and go to Catani. As a matter of fact, they didn't have the John Graff Bridge completed yet.
Where is that?
That's when you go to up the expressway and just before you get West Catani, that's where there's a Walmart store and all that. You just got off and you go to John Graff. He was a judge, John Graff, from Westmoreland County. That takes you over and you can go down, turn right and go down to Ford City. Then you make a circle around and you go back down into Catani and up the Catani Hill to go to 422 and 28 and 66 takes you up towards New Bethlehem, up towards Clarion, Brookville. But 422 will take you straight over to Indiana. 422 will take you over to Indiana. They didn't have that bridge completed yet. That's when I was driving because, I'll never forget the fellow that he was in Pittsburgh Plate Glass, and he was supposed to train me, see, to drive the truck. And we get up to Ford City, or to Catani rather. I knew that because I used to drive fire truck and everything else. And when you go down, you have a standard transmission. You slow the truck down, and you go down either the third gear or down into second gear, and you let the engine take most of the load going down that hill. Every now and then, you put the brake on just to slow you down to about 15, 20 mile an hour going down the hill. You went down into the Catani Bridge, through Catani, and down to Ford City. That's the way you would go. And this fellow rode with me. This is all over the bridge now. But when we came home that morning, you know, he said, "I'm going back up with you this afternoon." But he said, "You know, tomorrow." He said, "You just drop me off right at Ferry Street when we get off over the railroad track." He said, "I'm going home and do some work." And I says, "You sure you won't get, I can't think of his name right now." I said, "You sure you ain't not going to get fired?" He said, "I said, you're supposed to train me." He said, "You know just about this truck as I do." He says, "Go take the truck and go to Ford City." He said, "In the afternoon," he said, "don't come down here till 2:45 in the afternoon." He said, "Because we quit at 3:30. We started 7, we worked at 3:30. Don't come down here," he says, "at 2:45, I'll be standing across the railroad tracks by Ferry Street. You pick me up, we ride in the plant." And he says, "Then I punch out. I get paid." And he did that for a whole week. He was supposed to train me. Oh, there were so many things. One fellow that he went in and turned around, he said, "I'm going to go training for a driver." I said, "Are you sure you're going to do that job?" He said, "Oh, yeah." I said, "I'm not training." He rode till Thursday afternoon. He told Paul, he said, no, he said, I think it'll make me nervous. I'm going to take it. They'd ride for a whole, they'd ride 4 days. And then the next day, they'd go into the labor gang. And telephone said, no, that's too nervous for me to drive that truck. I won't drive. They'd do that. They actually did that. They're supposed to be good union men, see. A little cheating here and there. That went on.
What about your years in council? Were there other things that were significant about those years?
Oh, no, a lot of things. One time, I can tell you this, that was, I can't remember the exact year. I forget who got the job from the first ward. And they asked me if I'd be president of council. And that was the time that West Bend Power Company wanted to lease our power plant, see? And they wanted to close the police station, too, the fellows on council. And I said, no, I said, I'm not in favor of that. I said, I'm objecting to closing the police station. And I said, when West Bend Power wants anything done, I said, I want everyone to read exactly what they ask you to do. I said, before you vote or do anything. Well, I only served 3 months as president of council. And the one member of council got out, he said, Mr. Chairman, I move that we vacate the chair of the president of the council. And I said, that's okay. I said, either yes or no. And I think only one fall. Larry Ford said no. The rest did. Yes, vacate the chair. I said, thank you. I said, my hands are clean. I said, I didn't do anything wrong to the public. I said, only too glad to serve as a councilman. I don't know. In the meantime, the one guy was a dentist. He died. He had a heart attack. He died.
Did he become the next president?
No. Oh. No, he didn't. He was instrumental asking me to be the president of council. But what he told me, he wanted me to say yes right away. I said, no. I said, I'm not that type of a person. I said, the way I think, I'll tell you. I said, not the way you think, and you tell me what to do. I said, you tell me what you want, I'll tell you what I want, I'll do what I think is right, you do whatever you think is right. I said, that's when you have a good counsel. Oh, I objected to that. That was one of the things. But it didn't upset me or anything. I just, that's part of life. It's okay with me. But it was a good town to live in.
Something you mentioned the other day, and I wanted to ask you again, is about the company housing so close to the PPP plant.
Yes. West Trenum wasn't a big, it wasn't built a big town, Trenum. Mm-hmm. It was Pittsburgh Plank that started all these little towns. As a matter of fact, from Creighton up, if you went along when we went out Furry Street on the right-hand side, those three double brick houses, that it was either somebody from PPG or some realtor built those because they knew they got to have people to live there. As a matter of fact, when you come to the old Pittsburgh Plank plant, the first one I showed you there, there was homes right there. Those were people. Mr. Rotherham, the old Mr. Rotherham, was master mechanic for Pittsburgh Plate. R-O-T-H-E-R-A-M. Rotherham. R-O-T-H-E-R-A-M. John, I think. John Rotherham. That's the old, like my grandfather. He was a real old Englishman. And he lived. He had a home built real close to PPG because, at that time when Pittsburgh played in 1880, he either had a horse and a wagon. There was no cars. And trains were running. But people is just like this cousin of my dad that came here. He said in Germany it was the same way. You live right next to your factory because you didn't live miles away. And they... These houses on Conroy Way that I showed you there on that picture where it's flooded, those were just like company houses. You rented, and they knew that something happens that somebody doesn't come in. Well, they didn't have cars or anything to run around, run all over town to look for somebody to work. Not everybody had a phone either. That was not until 1900. You know, you got the phones. And what they did, and if they had anything, say in the late 1800, you had to go like to a drugstore. A drugstore would let you connect maybe with Pittsburgh Plate Glass in Trenton or with some factory down in Springdale. That's the way things were. You didn't have all these the things you did, feasibilities of things you have today. You didn't have it then. And they built the houses. And I'll have to ask Elizabeth Mice. That's when we parked down here on Western Street, and we walked, and we said, these are Mice's home. The old Mr. Mice built, those that belongs to the Mice family. Built those homes there because Pittsburgh played in 1886. They built that plant in Trenton. And they didn't have a lot of places for boarders and that. And that's the way the homes were built. It was close. The foreman could walk across the railroad track, go rap on somebody's door, say, so-and-so isn't here. You know, I need somebody to work. And, you know, you tell the wife or the husband they get to make a lunch or something. And there was no lunch stands or anything. They all carried their lunch pail with them, went to work. And like my grandfather told me, he said, during the day, you got 11 hours. You got the 11 hours because you do some work around your house. But he said, and then he said, the people that went out from 7 in the evening till 7 in the morning, that was 13 hours. You work, they try to get 13 hours in and 11 hours daylight. So you could do something, you know. Maybe you went, maybe start at 6 in the evening till 7 in the morning. Put 13 hours in. Then you'd work from 7 to 6. 11 hours.
On Sunday, wouldn't they do the switching?
Well, at that time, I don't know how they did then. I imagine that's probably what they did. They had to change. You know, you always didn't work always the same shift all the time. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, my grandfather, he told me, he said, that was nothing. He said, 13 hours. He said, that's what you worked. He said, just kept working right along, worked right along for 13 hours.
Mm-hmm. Did your dad do the same kind of work?
No. My father got a job. His first job, from what my father told me, that he got a job with Mice's. They had a general store down in here. And it was just like a grade school kid with a wagon hauling orders around in West Trenton, delivering orders. That was his first job. As a matter of fact, the old man Mice told my grandmother, Altman, that... he's big enough. He knows how to push a wheelbarrow. He can take orders. They're not that heavy. He can deliver orders. And then he did that. Then as he got a little bit older, he got a job with Friedman's in Trenton. Now, whether that was the Friedman's here, that was for furniture or what, I don't know. But then my dad got in with the store down in Creighton. And my grandfather, now I know that Mr. Conway died in 1907, and Mrs. Conway and my dad from 1907 up. So my dad was about 21, 22. He worked for the store down in Crady. Then my grandfather, Altman, put the money in and bought Conway's, paid Mrs. Conway to transfer the store to John Altman and son. That's my grandfather Altman to my father, Anton Altman. And my dad ran the store then until 1929 when the big depression hit. And he knew right away that's gonna be a long depression, and he just filed bankruptcy and shut the store down. He shut it down in 1929. Then he got a job with they'd actually didn't start the WPA until later. He loafed for almost a year, year and a half. And then they start giving money out to help towns put water lines and pave some streets and stuff, roads. And my dad got a job working. They put Route 908 908 from Freeport going out towards Millerstown, and my dad had a team of mules. He knew how to handle horses and mules. So my dad got that job. He hooked onto the steel frames that they put on the edge of the road. They put rods down in to hold it. Then they poured the concrete, you know, up again, those steel plates on the side. That was his job. When so much concrete had get finished, they'd pull the rods out. Then they'd get so many of those plates, hook them together with a cable, and then put a hook on them. Then they'd take a team of horses and drive them down and put a pile so far down the road, and then so many from the other side. That was my dad's job, driving the horses back and forth, driving horses.
Did you help him?
No. I was only in high school yet then. I was in high school. My dad said, no, go to high school. You want to go to high school? Everybody went to high school. And then in 36, my dad was working then for, we were still in East Deer Township. That's when my mother passed away in 1936. And he worked for the Emo Romero. It was a Democratic outfit in East Deer Township. He worked on highways out in Allegheny County.
What was the name of that?
Emo Romero was a Democratic leader in East Deer Township, and he hired so many people from East Deer. The government paid to pay people. But he was a foreman for PennDOT. Emo Romero, see? Emo Romero. He got a job. And my father worked on county roads over in Plumborough, up Coxcomb Hill, places over there. That's where he worked. My dad worked. Then, I think that was in 38. That's when my dad worked in the iron mill, down where I was at. See, 33, I got a job with the iron mill. But my dad, he liked the job, what he was doing with Emo Romero and the crew. Then he worked at the Penn Iron and Steel. When the Penn Iron and Steel shut down in 1945, in May, my dad went right up to Allegheny Steel, and I went to Pittsburgh Plate Glass.
He worked long, too, then.
Oh, yeah, my dad was 72 when he retired. He worked at the mill until he was 72 years old. Until he was 72. Teresa's dad did the same thing. My dad and Teresa's dad, those people all worked. As a matter of fact, I think maybe Teresa's dad worked till he was 75. I think he worked till he was 75 or 76. Trace, do you remember how old your dad was when he retired?
Oh,
I think he was about 75 or 76 when he retired.
Yeah, he was well up there, but I'm not good on dates.
I think.
Not even our kid's birthday. I've got to look up and
I mark it off. The way
when
I get it.
I have to mark and I have to check it, because I'd rather check it than get it wrong. I'm just not good on dates.
I mark most of it in the Bible, and then I keep a slip. Our great-grandchildren now that we have, I have their names in the Bible too, but you have to get the Bible out, and I'll have that Bible wore out, so I keep a slip in the front part of the telephone book, and I've got the list of everybody's, their date of birth, and I got the, we know when it's, this coming Saturday, not this Saturday, this Saturday is a granddaughter there out in Culmerville. We're going to their, her birthday. Oh, we, great life.
That's still on. Going to break the record.
That's
all right. It's so hot out there. You wouldn't believe it.
But I'll tell you what, I'll take these pictures. I'll make sure. I don't want to give. The other one is an old album, and it belonged to an aunt of mine of West Trenum and the Pittsburgh Plate Glass. And this, I'll give that to Ray and tell him. He'll take those pictures.
Yeah.
Because what I do, if I put it on the table, I put a piece of newspaper down, and I open it up, and then I take the album, put it in a plastic bag, and then I turn around, I have to fold that paper. A little piece of paper will drop off. It's real old.
It's all old. It's coming apart.
Those are pictures was taken back between 1912 and 1926.
Wow. I'll tell him.
What did I see here? No, wait, I'll just give you one thing to look.
What took them to Kentucky? Do you know how they got there?
You mean the Recton Wall.
They were born there, weren't they?
No, wait, I want to show you. I want to tell you something. This is on the Recton Wall family. This is the Recton Wall family. You can read, wait, let's see here. Born. Read where they were born.
They. Oh, they traveled. Some of the children are born in Buffalo.
Right.
Is that
Canada?
Fremont? Yeah.
Okay.
Cambridge, Ontario.
What he was, the family, the Recton Walls were more construction type of people. They were construction people. They came, as a matter of fact, the one that was Ann Seal, remember?
Yeah.
Her parents came here to this country on a sailing boat, not on a steamship.
So did my mother.
On a sailing boat?
Yes.
Wow. They were lucky they made it.
Big ships with sails, not steam. No steamships at that time when they came. And they ended up in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Okay.
Then he, Recktenwald, was a tinsmith. He knew how to put metal roofs on homes, buildings and everything. Anytime there was jobs going on where building homes, the family picked up Michael Recktenwald. He went. They went everywhere. When they ended up, he ended up and built a hardware store on Portland Avenue in Kentucky. And all the sons worked for the tinnings, the hardware store and tinning smith. Roofing business that they had in Kentucky. As a matter of fact, they had a son, Father Otho, O-T-H-O, Otho. Father Otho, he became a priest. He was a, I forget what, that's on my mother's grandparents. Grandparents, my mother's grandparents. But they traveled. They went to Canada. There was work in Canada, they went to Canada. If there was work in Ohio, they went to Ohio. If they went to Indiana, they went to Indiana. Wherever there was at, until they decided to settle down in Louisville, Kentucky. And they had, as a matter of fact, every one of my brothers, they all went to Kentucky. I'm the only one. My grandmother always said, Larry, someday you ought to go. She always told Grace and I, we ought to go down and see our old Kentucky home. That's where they were born. But the Browns, now the Brown family, they lived on a farm in Zanesville, Indiana. That's the Brown family. But then they moved off the farm. They went to industrial work. That's
well,
that's
you got a lot. You got a lot.
I did. I have one more thing that I want to ask you about, and that is the people of different ethnicity in Tarentum. Did they live in different sections?
Yes. Most Catholics lived in West Tarentum.
I figure that.
Most Catholics.
Catholic
every.
And the Conroy Way was Slovak.
Slovak.
Hmm.
They all went
and
to the factory.
They were mixtures. German, Slovak, and Italian. They were all around here. The nuns, when they come to teach, they realized that. So they told the children, you children, tell your parents to teach you a word or two in your own nationality. I tried to teach my daughter, and it was funny. She just laughed. She'd forget it. But it's true. If we would have taught them, they would have known the American language, their whatever they inherited, and they would have known two languages near and graceful. My landlord, Mrs. Hohorsch, she spoke fluently German because her husband was in the service in Germany. So she went there, she was married, and she worked there. She could speak good Slovak, very good German, and she taught, well, the children, when they at home, they spoke Slovak. So the children knew that from infancy. They learned it right away. Then they picked up the American language, like all children do. Then she took her children out of St. Clement's school, that was the Slovak school, sent them over to Sacred Heart, that was a German school. And I said, why did you do that? Because, she says, they taught them German. Those kids was little. She wanted those children to know three languages. Then when the war come along, they weren't allowed to teach German. So then she put them back into St. Clement's. That is how smart the Mr. and Mrs. Holdsworth. My parents didn't think that's why they kept us in St. Clements. But they couldn't further their education because of the war. So we had a nice mixture, but Conroy Way was strictly Slovak, with just like row houses. And good, hard working people raised good children.
Yep.
That's what they were. Then this expressway come along, it just messed up West Trenum terribly.
What about, I've heard that there were people here who were Belgian and Italian, did they live in certain areas?
No, they were mixed. They were
mixed.
West 8th Avenue was more predominantly Belgians on West 8th Avenue. That's right, on West 8th Avenue. Then on 9th and 10th up here were more German up in this end, upper here. Then, first thing you know, well, like, what was this family that lived over here next to where Golds live over here? That was a Slovak. Pavliks. The Pavlik family.
So then they started.
They got married.